This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, we are here. Our guest, Attorney Tom Ryan and political analyst Chuck Coughlin. Chuck and I had a show several weeks ago where we went through national politics. We thought it was about time to take a look on the more local scene. But at the bridge between local and national politics, we have the United States Senate. Major development in recent days. Those are that it looks like the way is being cleared for a U.S. Senate nomination for, Representative Gallego has bowed out in favor of Commander Kelly. It looks like they're clearing the field for him.
Absolutely. Keep in mind that initially there was also Grant Woods, former Republican, very independent-minded fellow, now a Democrat.
Who announced that on this show here, by the way? We were first. He came here directly from the registrar's office and said,
I'm a Democrat.
I just changed my registration.
He would have been a formidable candidate in the primary, but he also had the Republican baggage from before, and he had a few other issues.
I think he would have been unbeatable in the fall, but there's the classic problem that he had.
Got to get out of the primary.
How do you get out of the primary? You're a lifelong Republican. Of course, he would not have fared well in a Republican primary either. So,
correct. And then we had Ruben Gallego was considering a run, and Ruben would have been another formidable candidate, but the field's been cleared for Commander Mark Kelly, and I think you're going to see a lot of NRA attack ads coming after him, but he's the right guy to weather that storm, I think.
Yeah, I think Kelly, he's an astronaut, right? I mean,
yes.
That's the right stuff, you know, and he's a fighter pilot. That's what McSally was extolling, and so he's never been a candidate, right? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the big test, is how does that translate? You know, I was talking to people the other day, and it was like, you know, you don't go to space to hang out with people. So you're going to find
just
out.
Just your very closest friends in a
monkey. Yeah,
you know, I read a piece the other day on this and said, you know, he may not be advantaged, that first-time candidates who do not face a primary, which is admittedly a small sample.
Yeah.
Generally don't fare very well, and I'm sure you know the reason is they haven't been tested,
yeah,
you know, on the stump, and they may do inappropriate
things.
He's
got a great campaign team. Rod McLeod is his consultant. Rod did most of Kirsten's last campaign.
So this is going to be Kirsten Sinema too?
Well, and then he did Gabby's campaigns back in the day, and so— he's very close to the family and very good guy and knows what he's doing and knows how to win a centrist race.
But you still have the candidate out there in the stump asking,
right,
answering questions who hasn't done a whole lot
but
of it.
I want to talk a minute about Gallego's decision, which I thought was unusual for our times of self-interested politics. Because I believe I went and I actually told him this. I said, I thought if he'd run, he would have won. And let me explain that thinking.
In November. Okay.
Because what we're looking at in the last cycle, we had, in a gubernatorial cycle, you generally have about a 12-point Republican participation advantage. The last cycle, 6. In a normal presidential cycle, you have a Republican participation advantage of about 6. So in a presidential cycle, in the future presidential cycle, it's looking to be almost flat. And the Democratic Party, you know, Felicia's doing a great job of raising money, and they have this outreach to get millennial voters and a lot more people participating. And we've seen 2 cycles now in a row. The mayoral cycle here in Phoenix also had an increased Democrats outperformed Republicans in that race as well. So I thought just
– not just beat the normal – because Republicans normally outperform. They not only closed that gap, they actually exceeded it.
They actually exceeded it, right. And so there's enthusiasm on that side of the equation that Ruben, with his more progressive politics, his Marine Corps veteran, I mean, I think could have narrated to that constituency, particularly in a Democratic primary. But I think he holds up pretty well against McSally too by virtue of McSally ran a race, and you know, we saw the big joke there was her best ad was her concession speech with her dog. So you know, that was something. But Ruben made a decision, I believe, based upon his youth. He's 37 years old. The prospect of holding a seat here for a long time, cultivating a relationship with Mark Kelly as a Senate, and then potentially if the presidency switches in this next cycle, he's in a driver's seat for, you know, at least 8 years, if not longer, and being able to cultivate one of the problems Democrats have had here. You know, Jim Peterson was the old school Democratic leadership here. It's really not had it. I mean, we've really not had that community of support. In that position, he could cultivate a community of support in Arizona based upon, and he's not, I mean, he's a fire-breathing guy. He's not as progressive, I think, as people think he is. But, you know, he's a Harvard-educated as well. He's not a dummy. And so he's not an empty suit. He knows what he's talking about. And so I think there's something really interesting to watch here, how he evolves and the role he takes. He's got an ex-wife now as the mayor of Phoenix. You got the trappings of something.
That appears to be a friendly divorce.
It does. No, they're doing well together. I mean,
they are not all.
They're raising a kid, and that's important.
I want to ask Chuck a question here about your thoughts on the McSally-Kelly race coming up here. What do you think about any kind of potential backlash for pushing McSally in rather than calling for a general election? There's a lot of – to me, it seems there's a lot of – angst out there because Ducey played the game with two different individuals, Kyle and then McSally. What do you think? Is there going to be any residual backlash because she was the loser and then she got shoehorned into the position? What do you think?
The residual backlash would be if she loses, right? I mean, there'll be all kinds of people being critical of that.
That's very easy Monday morning quarterbacking.
Right, it's easy Monday morning quarterbacking. But I don't think on the inside it was, you know, maintaining some sense of stability. We were going to, you know, we had never had two freshman senators since the statehood, right? And so that's pretty rare. You want people in there with experience. She was a congresswoman from Southern Arizona, had won two elections in what is considered a pretty swing district. But as we all know, running a statewide race versus a congressional race or a city council race or a legislative race is a whole different bag of beans. And she didn't narrate that really well last time. And so the path for her forward, I think, is figuring out an immigration situation here.
The question, do you think she gets a primary challenge?
She may. I don't think so because of the governor's support for her. He owns the Republican machinery now in the state. He's the driving force behind it. And so I don't really – if she does, it will not be a substantial one. It will be one she could virtually ignore.
And that's actually probably a plus. By the way, on the other side, we've heard rumblings. Chris DeShane, remember him? He's making – but I think
somebody.
that would be, in effect, an opportunity for a dry run without a high threat.
But I think it'll be an interesting cycle to watch. But it'll be an interesting long-term trajectory to watch what Congressman Gallego does and how he matures in that role. He's a young man right now, and I think, you know, if he manages that well, he's got a great future.
He'll do fine. It's a tough decision, but a good move on his part.
Yeah.
Well, we will be back in our next segment, moving more closer into Arizona per se politics when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, it's that time of year in the legislature when they have to divvy up the pie.
Spring training's over.
Yeah. You say bipartisan budget.
Gotta be. The Speaker, Rusty Bowers, has got 31 votes. As of today, he's got 30. We'll probably get to that in another segment.
They're going to move that pretty quick on that, aren't they?
Yeah, they'll get that.
I don't want to get into other than
we'll
the
get
fact,
into that, but it, I think it'll be Steve Pierce, the former state senator.
It'd be a good choice. He's been elected. Yeah. He knows his way around.
And he'd be helpful in accomplishing what Rusty needs to accomplish.
Mediate a deal, yeah.
But here's the challenge. It's you know, you got parts of both caucuses that are really not wanting to play nicely together.
And that's why the Republicans need the Democrats, because they're not going to
Well, there's parts of Charlene Fernandez, who's the majority leader in the, or minority leader in the House, has parts of her caucus that, you know, could easily bail on her, too.
But the difference being, though, is if the Republicans didn't have any defections, they wouldn't need the Democrats at all.
Well, that's true. That's true. But they 31 votes, you're going to get defections. There's no doubt about it. And so you're going to have to build a bipartisan budget. It'll start in the Senate with President Fan. You know, there's a 17-13 majority over there. I suspect there'll be even some efforts to get some programs that recruit a few Democratic votes in the Senate as well. It's the Christmas list. Everybody's trying to figure out what you want, and which is great, because you got to figure out what people want to get what you need, right? And so that's what's going to go down here in the next several weeks. But the funny thing was, in Ms. Fernandez, I think in their first leadership meeting, you know, looked at the speaker and she goes, you know, I could be over in your chair in 2 years from now, and Peterson, the majority leader in the House, took that badly, and that was off to a bad start. But what I'd say, and I've said this to Ms. Fernandez, I said, remember, you could be there in 2 years, and they will treat you the same way that you're treating them. It's the old golden rule. You'll probably – you could have a 1-2-seat majority, and they're going to be cannibalizing you too. So work in the best interest of the body, as the whole body, not as the caucus, and get a majority of the majority. Get a majority of your caucus. You know, that's Rusty's – that's the speaker's rule. I need a majority, 16 votes to move something out of my caucus. She should be adopting the same rule, and that's the coalition that looks like will mature into a budget. Transportation issues there.
Red for
education
Ed, I
issues
is going to be back at the table.
Well, there's the governor's play to put more money in the rainy day fund. There's healthcare. There's a few healthcare issues. There's some sentencing issues that are still floating around out there, but nothing's.
You know, that's an interesting point. In sentencing, does play into budget.
Oh, big time.
ADOC
is.
If we're not going to sentence people for as long, we're not going to have as many prisoners, that frees up money.
Noel Campbell, the Senate, the House Transportation guy, he threw a bill out there to raise the gas tax and equalize it, because there's all kinds of vehicles out there now that don't pay anything to be on the road. Natural gas and electric vehicles aren't paying anything. And so he put it out there.
But they presumably are doing a social good by not polluting our air.
Yeah, that's great, as long as you got a road to drive on, I suppose. But you know, you need
still
a road.
You still got to pay the road.
It's a user tax. And we haven't increased the gas tax since 1991 out here, when the state was half the size it is today.
And there's no index. So really, it's been cut.
So, well over half. Both chambers have looked at passing a budget bill that eviscerates what the governor did last time. He got a $32 vehicle registration fee. They're looking at cutting that in half or eliminating that, and maybe replacing it with some other revenues,
a gas tax,
an equalization on those types of vehicles, or an index, and balance things out, and maybe build something around 20 and 40 that could float up to the governor. So our joke all the time is it's the puzzle palace down there, and it is certainly a puzzle palace. That's a jigsaw this year. It's not a child's puzzle this year, man.
No, it's always tough, and you do have some. There is daylight between the Republicans and the state legislature and Doug Ducey on a number of the budget issues. And that's going to make it problematic.
Conformity. They still haven't dealt with conformity on the federal tax code and the state tax code. That's still in play. The Wayfair decision.
And then basically up to this point, they haven't done conformity. So it looks like in this year's taxes,
I would suspect it's going to be part of this end package. Maybe not in the budget.
You think they go back and retroactively do it for 2018?
I'm not going to make a guess right now.
What a mess!
But you do. It's going to be a could be a trailer bill. It could be part of the budget package that ends up moving at the end. They're also looking at the Wayfair decision, which is the Supreme Court's decision that allows internet taxation on goods and services and how that applies in Arizona. There's a
if you don't
major
tax
dispute.
That, you're going to be into ever diminishing tax
right. And there's a major dispute base. Between the Arizona Tax Research Association right now and the League of Cities and Towns on digital goods. That seems to have killed the digital goods bill this year because of its vagueness and lack of clarity. We're not. I don't think there's an argument that you need to make more clarity about some of those issues, but there isn't any consensus thought on that right now. So, lots of things as spring training concludes and the baseball season heats up. Opening day is about dawned on the legislature of opening day with the first pitch on the budget here coming soon.
Could you see a deal trading the vehicle license tax for a gas tax?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's part of it. I think there, if you're talking about a majority of the majority caucus, about 16 Republican votes to get something on the floor, I think there's a possibility of doing that.
I think you could get the Democrats on that one because VLT is regressive. That's everybody pays the same whether you got a new Mercedes or an old.
But here's what's going on right now. I just had to register one of my cars, and I got to pay the $32. I can't.
You did the 1 year though. You didn't do the 2 years.
I only did the 1 year.
There you go. Tom's a smart guy.
Mama didn't raise a fool.
But as people go through it and they see that additional money being taken out of their pocketbook, the longer they wait, the more people are going to have the same kind of view I did. Well, this stinks.
Yeah, and they've gotten a lot of blowback on that fee.
Right.
And they're getting blowback on the gas tax. But I think people generally understand that you need to have roads, and we haven't increased the tax since 1991.
Yeah, so. Right. But it is a tax. User fee is a tax. I mean, but a very legitimate one.
Heading to the gate here with let the river run, let the roads work.
But interesting, I'll leave with this thought. You don't have time to answer, but there is a different urban-rural break on that.
Yes.
Gas tax hits harder in the rural areas, may hit difficulty getting
roads
with that.
Further
we'll
to
return
go.
In a moment in the think tank.
The morning light. Streets that lead them and sirens call them on with a song.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back here with our guys, Tom Ryan and Chuck Coughlin. Chuck, you sent me a note. You think there's a basis for an immigration deal having to do with the amount of releases being at an all-time high. We clearly have a 24th in Lower Buckeye here. The ICE people are dumping people every day, and the local agencies are screaming, you're not coordinating with us. They can coordinate, but I don't see how this gets us to a deal. Explain that to me.
Well, the mayor of Yuma was in the office the other day, a client of ours, the city of Yuma, and he was saying they're releasing 200 families a week into Yuma.
Into Yuma?
Into Yuma. I mean, and it's not sustainable because they do not have even the faith-based infrastructure to accommodate that type of load.
I thought they were taking most of them to Phoenix.
No, they're dumping them. They're
everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yuma's easy because it's a border crossing, so they're walking them across the
tiny
street
town. Yeah, it's a tiny town, relatively. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still a city, but
it doesn't
can't
have the absorption capacity. Most of them aren't staying here anyway, ultimately.
McSally wrote a letter this week to the president, to Homeland Security, saying we need a solution. We need an answer here. This begets they can't cage him and deny him. Trump's this week saying, Mexico's letting him come to. Well, Mexico's doing. These are Guatemalans. These are Hondurans. Yeah. These are people traveling through their country to get here because of political violence.
They have a problem
and poverty
too.
In Central America. I mean, so there is a problem here. I think it's becomes a human a human rights issue. That the Democrats will have to address because the only people that are addressing it right now is the faith-based community. And it begins to formulate an idea. And there was
I talked to some of those folks. What they're doing is they are streaming. Most of these folks have family somewhere.
Yeah.
And they're getting them on buses to wherever it is
with an ankle bracelet. And, you're supposed to show up and report. Well, Peter King was in the New York Times this week with a Democratic representative talking about, we got to do this. Yeah. And, You know, Trump needs to do something to break out of his – the last legislative victory he had was the Trump tax cut, which really wasn't a bipartisan solution. And if he wants to show that he can govern, he's going to have to execute some type of plan.
He's got to do something. Yeah, and building a wall has absolutely nothing to do with it because these people are walking through open gates.
That's what appeals to his base is the building the wall, which is not a solution.
But his base isn't big enough to get him elected.
But build a wall is a metaphor for don't let anybody in.
Yes. It's
and they're
not,
letting them all. They have
well,
to
they have
them
to
in.
By
they
the law.
To, by the law. So
that's the problem. Is it's not going to solve this humanitarian crisis. I think you correctly stated that, Chuck. And the wall does – to call it a metaphor, it's just going to be a big, ugly thing. Walls don't work. They didn't work in Berlin. They didn't work in China.
But I want to go back to this issue of how this gets us to a deal because I get it. There is a real problem here, but –
How do we get
Trump off of just build a wall? Is everything.
Because Mitch McConnell's got 22 seats to defend in the U.S. Okay. Senate, and if they have any hope of making any strides in the House, they have to demonstrate that they can govern on an issue like this. Most all public opinion polls that I've seen, a overwhelming majority of Democrats, Independents, PNDs support this. You get a split group with Republicans. It's right around the 50%.
And the last election kind of showed that.
So if you want to run a campaign in the 20 cycle, you're going to have to do something to demonstrate that you can appeal. And this is the number one issue in Arizona. It's the most important issue on the radar screen right now. And so you're going to have Martha McSally running against Mark Kelly probably. And that's going to be the issue. Who's going to get it done? And so – If the Republicans want to make an effort to try and engage a larger portion of the electorate to secure some more support for a candidate like Martha, this will be a critical issue.
Do you see Martha McSally picking up the McCain line, let's go build the dang wall, though, for this election cycle?
No. I think she saw this letter that she wrote the other day saying to, Homeland Security Secretary, we got to get it done.
Right. She did. I agree. That was the right call on her part, and I'm proud of her for doing
that. Yeah. In a way, that was the easy one. You're dumping people on the street without giving notice to anybody.
It's a
start.
They
can clean that up without changing any real policy.
Well,
coordinate better with agencies. That doesn't solve – well, something good in the immediate sense.
Here's the problem with immigration as we deal with it in the United States. There's the three countries down in Central America that have a violence problem because they have poor economies down there. Cutting off money to them because people are leaving and trying to get into the United States is not a resolution to our immigration problem. Forcing them to stand outside the border is not a resolution to our immigration problem. And then dumping them in Yuma, Tucson, Phoenix.
Yep.
Is not a resolution to our immigration problem. What we need is to get off this whole concept of the wall and start talking like they did before with the Gang of Eight. Mm-hmm. And they had a bipartisan resolution that would have resolved not everything, but a big chunk of immigration
we're
issues.
Functionally at full employment. I mean, you have 2.5%, 3% unemployment.
If ever they're taking your jobs, argument would not work.
Happening.
It would be now.
Right. It's not. And so,
and by the way, 2.5% unemployment, just to explain, that's full employment.
Yeah.
That's the amount that you get. When people leave one job and they take another, they usually take a couple of weeks off in between. That's what the 2.5% is. It's zero in real sense. It's
home
zero.
Builders, production builders here
can't find people.
Can't find people to bring houses online fast enough. Skilled labor, carpenters, plumbers, electricians. Those kind of engineering, not here. I mean, but we have training programs, EVIT, Mayor Cope Community College, got all these training programs to create opportunities for people, and we need to figure that out.
Do you think we could get another Ellis Island started up all the way down in Nogales? I mean, I really think that's – Ellis Island wasn't perfect, but it did it really helped keep it organized when people were coming in from Eastern Europe, Italy, Ireland.
Mm-hmm. They had a facility. I bet you – I assume toured that facility. They had a pretty big facility there where they held people while they – where they, you know,
adjudicated
did medical
their
and
status
other screening.
Yeah. Out, right.
Right.
I mean, that's a concern. I was listening to the mayor the other day. I mean – it could become a public health crisis with people coming across the border who haven't been screened for mumps and measles and all these other things.
Well, you also got a lot of folks here who haven't gotten vaccinated.
Not a lot. Well, comparatively speaking, we're in a better shape public health wise.
Yeah. Yeah, who wants to run on the pro disease, program?
Yeah,
I'm pro measles.
You probably could probably get away with mandatory vaccination for people who are immigrating.
I'm sure they could. I have no doubt about that. Yeah.
We have to have a more humane way of doing this. We have to recognize the economic problems that are forcing people up here. We have to recognize the violence that exists down there in Central America, in the idea of separating families, not keeping track of the children where they.
That's the most appalling. If you separate them, that's bad enough, but then you don't keep track.
No,
I mean
they were keeping track of young women's menstrual cycles, but they couldn't keep track of the kids. That is just a mind blowing thing to me.
And by the way, to clear up one thing, because this comes up all the time from every person I've ever talked to that's involved in this: if you take somebody and they get an attorney, and then you send them off somewhere, they show up for court. The ones that don't show up for court, they send you out, maybe put a wrist. Bracelet on you, send you away. You don't have a clue what you're supposed to do. Those people don't show up,
right?
Because they don't know, they don't understand the system,
right?
And they're intimidated.
Yeah, you got to give them a lawyer. The
U.S. District Court in Arizona is the busiest court in the entire United States, simply because it's overwhelmed by the immigration issues that it faces. Probably 4 or 5 years ago, I did a case down in Tucson. And it took us years. It wasn't a complicated case, but it took us years to get there. And when we got there, the first 2 hours of every day were filled with immigration issues. My trial would get 3 to 4 hours a day instead of like 6 hours a day. But that's the day that John Roll got shot down there with Gabby Giffords. He was there to thank her for her efforts in trying to push for more judges. He was the chief judge of all the federal judges in Arizona. Mm-hmm. That was his point of being there, was to tell her, thank you for your efforts to try and bring more. We're still understaffed here in the state of Arizona.
If you want to get quicker resolution of these cases, you need more people to do it.
Right. What Mick Mulvaney and Steve Miller were doing in the White House was telling the judges, just process more. Yeah. Well, judges have this obligation to the Constitution. Judges have an obligation to due process. And due process doesn't just mean rubber stamping things. Mm-hmm. You have to hear the evidence. You have to apply the law. You have to make a decision.
My guess is that Ellis Island, the due process was probably a little more truncated.
Our justice system has certainly evolved.
Because you were kept there until you were done.
Right.
It can be redesigned. Now we have technology. I think that it can be streamlined. And this, because we're not addressing it, it's created a helter-skelter immigration system. It's not even a system. It's just a helter-skelter immigration
haphazard.
Problem. It's haphazard is exactly right.
Okay,
Chuck.
A couple more issues to go. When we return in just a moment in the think tank, we'll talk about other Arizona issues facing the state. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, this is a wrap here with Chuck Coughlin and Tom Ryan. Okay, last week we lost a representative. David Stringer seemed to work pretty hard at it. What's your take, Tom?
Oh, my God. What an embarrassment. I'm going to say to Yavapai County, do better. As you know, Stringer has had a history of making unfortunate racial remarks. He has been associated with some white national organizations, certainly in the Arizona school system. If that wasn't bad enough.
Well, I think the quote was not enough white kids in the schools or
correct,
something like that.
Correct. Yeah. And then if that wasn't bad enough, the Phoenix New Times did some digging into Mr. Stringer's background, contacted the court system back in Baltimore, Maryland, and found out that there was a plea agreement to five different counts of sex charges to involving child pornography. Those charges were later expunged by court order, and then the file was sealed.
But then there became an issue of his application to on the state bar and whether or not that was candid, and that was kind of fuzzied.
Well, you know, when you apply to the State Bar of Arizona, you have to give them fingerprints. You have to be above board on every problem you've ever had. I've had to represent young attorneys who were applying for the bar that had some dings on their record. And there's a good reason for that. Lawyers are fiduciaries. In spite of all the lawyer jokes that you might hear, we have charge of trust accounts. And so when people are placing their trust in us as lawyers, we have to be like Caesar's wife. We have to be completely pure. And so these were very serious issues, the race issue and his conviction and then expungement for whatever these sexual offenses were. So then ethics charges were brought by Kelly Townsend in the House, as well as Representative Reginald Boulding. And instead of doing it the way they did with Don Shooter, where they just had argument and they had the investigation and then the vote, I think Rusty did it the right way. Rusty Bowers created an ethics committee to do an investigation. They issued subpoenas to Mr. Stringer to get at that conviction. They also
he contested those in court.
He did.
And at the moment when it looked like the court was not going to uphold his desire to keep it under wraps, he immediately resigned.
Well, the jig was up. Here's the deal. The House has under the Arizona Constitution the right to control and patrol its own members. And so it can oust them for good cause or basically even no cause. And so over the years, we've seen them go. Scott Bungard got tossed. Mm-hmm. Don Shooter got tossed.
I wouldn't say anybody's been tossed for no cause, though.
No, I'm not saying – no, I know.
The ones have been tossed more than deserved.
Well, this one came down to a clean – they subpoenaed him, as Tom said, and said produce the document, and he didn't want to produce the document. And then that becomes a – you're now ignoring a House rule committee and not abiding by it, and that sealed the fate. Mm-hmm. Then they were going to have a vote saying, well, you refused to comply with the – with the committee, with the ethics committee.
And also the mere fact of doing that causes a reasonable person to suspect that the inference is the contents are devastating.
And he chose to duck.
Right.
And walk.
Right. So. Unlike a criminal proceeding, there is no presumption of innocence in the legislature. If you don't comply with the subpoena, they have the right to presume otherwise. It's like a trial court.
It's just remarkable to me. I've been doing this for a long time now, but it's remarkable to me the number of people who come forward want to run for office and say, oh, yeah, I'm great. I got all this. And, and you're like, really? That happened? And you're going to think that that's not going to come to fruition.
Oh, they'll never find it out, right?
It's like, come on. Why do people put themselves through this to, it takes a special breed of cat to do that.
And it's not only that – not only do you don't have anything bad that you – but you also have to not have anything that could be portrayed as looking bad.
One of the things we know now is that when candidates run for office, there's a lot of opposition research that goes on. And whatever's in your past is going to be found. And in this day and age of Google and internet searches,
it's not hard.
It's not hard to find anything.
Well, and you're going to see more of both parties doing that on some of these primary candidates at lower levels. I mean, it was pretty shocking to me that this didn't come out, that it took the New Times, some digging and finding and running around and finally dump it into the newspaper. You're going to see more of this. You're going to see that there's going to be a finer sift of information over the next couple cycles.
Here's the amazing thing about Stringer's election in the first instance. It's number one, in Yavapai County, it's not like people didn't know about his views, okay? And it came up before his election. Remember, Doug Ducey asked him, please don't run, pull out of the race, and he refused to do so. And in spite of all the publicity, including with Reverend Gerald Maupin.
Yeah.
Great call.
There's a character witness for him.
It's like having Mephistopheles, Beelzebub, and Lucifer.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is he got, I think, if I remember correctly, he got 67,000 votes.
No, he got more votes than
any other representative in the city and in the state
in
house.
In the district. And so you're like, I said on this air, I think back when that came up, I said, nah, probably in a Republican primary in the district when he had made those initial comments at a Rotary Club meeting up there about the schools. And
they could live with the racial comments. They probably couldn't live with the child sex stuff.
No, that was going to be a little more difficult pill to swallow. Yeah. And so – but I said, yes, yeah, some of those comments are probably going to Republican primary voters. It's not a big universe. Mm-hmm. It's not the 67,000 that turn up, but that's how you get on the ballot because we have a closed primary. And so, right. You know, you run in a very narrow place and then, you know, you're there. And so it's surprising to me that, again, that this information took so long to get out.
Well, who's the gentleman from the West Valley that was running the to amend the Brady Law? Who had gotten sanctioned by the police department?
You got to explain the Brady Law.
Okay, Brady Law is not the Brady Law. It's part of the Brady Law.
Yeah.
You have to disclose. Prosecutors have to disclose if any of the investigators, detectives, or police officers have ever been subject to any kind of a sanction for their misconduct
in a lot of cases, that's the first thing a defense attorney goes to.
Of course, because you want to be able to cross-examine them. It's a very damaging thing to be put on that list, the Brady list, if you're a detective or a police officer. Basically,
you're going to be pretty ineffective.
Correct. You can go be a dispatcher, but you're not going to be somebody out in the field after that.
So he'd taken some equipment, a computer. Representative Anthony Kern, chairman of the House Rules Committee, had taken some equipment, disclosed that he was paying, had lost a computer, disclosed that he was paying back, and then it was discovered that he wasn't paying back for it, and then he was dismissed from the force, which as that triggered the quote-unquote a Brady violation. And so, yeah, I mean, those are kind of things that you're going to keep looking at, and things keep coming up, and, you know, hey, it's Arizona. It's an interesting place.
But he, you know, all he had to do was not push for that bill, and I doubt that anybody would have known, but he, there's a certain confidence level that people gain, and they think that nobody will ever know. I'm loved. I'm liked.
Well, so that all our listeners don't think everybody's like that. There's a lot of fine people that do serve in the Arizona
legislature.
And
they don't make it into the paper quite as often.
Right. There's a lot of fine people that work down
here.
We always run out of time before we run out of ideas. Tom Ryan, Chuck Coughlin, thank you both. We'll see you next week in the Think Tank. You can find our archive podcast at ktr.com and the older ones at michaelneal.org. See you next week. Silver cities rise, the morning lights, the streets that lead.